sundown towns are towns that were, for decades, all white on purpose, and some of them still are. It turns out that they're all across the Midwest.
That's James Loewen, the author of Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism. Loewen has spent years researching and trying to catalog towns that historically kept black people out of them by whatever means necessary. Some towns had signs that made their intentions clear. One that says whites only within city limits after dark covers the front of Loewen's book. Others used more crass language, racial slurs, or threats of violence to get their point across.
They're in Oregon, they're in California, they're in the far west, Pennsylvania. They're almost everywhere except the traditional South.
Sundown towns weren't typically a Southern thing, Loewen says, because in the South, white people wanted black people in their towns to do the jobs they didn't want to do. Janitors, maids, cotton pickers.
But across the Midwest, all kinds of towns, hundreds of them in Indiana.
Between the 1890s and the 1940s, sundown towns became a popular trend in northern states. In his book, Loewen profiles three Indiana towns, Elwood, Huntington, and Martinsville. John Aiden is the executive director of the African American Historical Society Museum in Fort Wayne. He remembers Martinsville, Indiana, as an unfriendly place.
You could not be caught in that county or anywhere near that town, even during the day, let alone at night.
Aiden says the beginning of sundown towns have ties to past laws from the antebellum period before the Civil War. Past laws allowed enslaved African Americans to conduct business for their owners, which sometimes meant they were also allowed to travel after dark. In the North, Southern slave owners would travel with their enslaved people. Aiden says many scholars believe sundown towns arose after the Civil War as a means of keeping black labor in the counties where they lived, rather than allowing them the safety to move to new counties.
After the Civil War, many white Americans who had relied on enslaved African American labor were not intending to farm their own land or, you know, perform the activities that they felt were beneath their station in life. And so that meant retaining black labor.
Some sundown towns had official legislation on their books to keep black people out of their cities. But most, Aiden says, were extrajudicial.
A lot of African Americans would just know which towns were sundown towns or cities and which ones to avoid by nightfall.
Today, some towns have officially removed sundown legislation from their books, but many towns have swept the past under the rug. In his book, Loewen tells of asking local librarians if they saved the threatening signs or photos of them, and recalls them often laughing at the question, asking, "Why would we do that?" In northeast Indiana, the city of Huntington has been documented as a confirmed sundown town on Loewen's website. Huntington Mayor Richard Strick says that while the city has come a long way, a lack of documentation can make having conversations about that time difficult and hard to relate the current environment to the city's past.
Even before you get into people feeling like they're not responsible for what happened here historically and the various tensions that we're all living through in our nation right now and trying to have these conversations.
In 2009, Huntington unveiled a new mission statement which mentions its citizens, quote, "ethnic, economic, and religious diversity provides the strength that holds our community together," and says it's a, quote, "community of civility and inclusion where diversity is honored." Strick says he thinks the adoption showed the city trying to move forward from that checkered history, but that it's an ongoing challenge to make sure that everyone in the community feels represented and welcomed.
Not only included, but helping to lead our community. And I think that that's a challenge everywhere, that I think, again, the dynamics here being a nearly all-white community are unique, but the underlying tensions and dynamics, they come out of the same place. And so how do we embrace this? How do we work through this? How do we allow ourselves to be challenged?
Loewen has also written about the portrayal of sundown towns in entertainment. He says he knows of five movies that talk about sundown towns, including recent Academy Award winner for Best Picture, Green Book, all of which set these towns in the Deep South.
And then on the other hand, famous movie made in Indiana, Hoosiers, among other things, it's about the basketball team in Milam, Indiana, which was a sundown town, which beats another basketball team from another sundown town, and they're playing in the sectional part of the statewide tournament in Jasper, Indiana, which is a third sundown town. And yet Hollywood never mentions this. Indeed, they put a couple of black folks in the crowd scenes.
Loewen keeps a running website of confirmed and suspected sundown towns and encourages visitors to help him confirm towns.
Many people living in some sundown towns have no idea. And, of course, I'm saying many white people, black people, too, don't know. People who don't want to know usually don't know. So it's good to get that truth about the past out, because then it takes away your illusions.
Why is it so important to chronicle this part of a town's history? Lowen mentions Ferguson, Missouri as an example of what he calls second-generation sundown town problems. Ferguson was briefly a sundown town between 1940 and 1960. Lowen says the black population was thrown out by the white population. He says the separation was enforced by an overwhelmingly white police force, which would ticket and harass black motorists for passing through the town.
Well, by the time Ferguson had the shall we say, riot or demonstrations, for which they are now famous, Ferguson was almost two-thirds black, but it still had that leftover from the sundown town day police force. So that's an example of a second-generation sundown town problem.
Jacoby Williams is a professor of African American and African Diaspora Studies at Indiana University and specializes in social justice, politics, and civil rights. He explains the relationship policing had to sundown towns during their heyday and how it relates to the distrust of policing we're seeing today.
So, for example, if a person, and this is anecdotal, but these are real-life experiences, a person of color is in a particular location that's classified as a sundown town, and the people of that community attack that person, the police will not arrest them. In fact, they may arrest the person who was attacked.
Today, Williams says this translates as law enforcement who may harass people of color for being in areas they don't think they belong in by following them out of town, searching them without proper explanation, or giving them tickets. He says the civil rights movement in the 1960s and the Black Lives Matter movement we're seeing today are mirror images of each other as they continue to fight for many of the same issues.
The difference between the two periods now is folks are calling for defunding the police, whereas in the earlier generations in the 60s, for example, and beyond, folks were advocating for community control of policing. So defunding the police and community control is still similar, whereas defunding the police is asking that those resources be allocated to certain entities in the community so the community can police themselves. And in the 60s, having community control of police was the same, having people who are from the community do most of the policing themselves to avoid these confrontations.
Lowen also says that the ongoing legacy of these towns is often misunderstood and damaging. He uses Kenilworth, Illinois, as an example. Lowen says Kenilworth is the richest suburb of Chicago, which 5 years ago didn't have a single black household. After hearing time and again that Kenilworth is just too expensive for black families, Lowen decided to do his own research.
And I found that there are 7,000 black households, black families, in the Chicago area that make more money than the median family does in Kenilworth. So they could not only move into Kenilworth in terms of economics, they could move into the upper half of Kenilworth, into the larger houses. But they don't.
Still, the explanation of just not rich enough not only persists, but is then passed down to younger generations to continue to sow the belief that people of color are economically inferior.
So we have to realize that we're not talking about racism in the distant past. We're talking about racism in a fairly recent past that still affects the fortunes of black folks and white folks today.
As protests took place across the nation at the beginning of the summer, Huntington, Indiana was not immune, even as a mostly white community and former sundown town. Mayor Richard Strick says they saw what was happening in other communities and were able to plan out a response to the protest. He says Huntington's law enforcement community recognized that people coming out to protest had a just cause and are passionate about justice.
We wanted to make sure that we supported them as they exercised their constitutional rights and freedoms and helped them to do so in a way that kept them safe and kept the community at large safe as well, also knowing that there was likely to be, and there was, counter-protesters.
Strick says they were able to set law enforcement up in designated areas, intentionally dressed in casual clothing to make them more approachable to encourage dialogue. Their sheriff and chief of police were able to reach out to organizers and help plan things, as well as supply water. Strick says he believes the protest was a sign of progress for the city because of the number of people who showed up, but also that it means there's still a lot of work to be done. For WBOI News, I'm Ella Abbott.